Is it by? I said, well, it's not by anywhere. It's about 2 hours from everywhere. And so I was living in Portland, and then during COVID realized that almost all of my responsibilities went on to Line. And so I still do a lot of virtual stuff with Western and then do retreats with pastors. And so my wife was retiring, and so we moved to Wenatchee, where she has three sisters and a mom, and she is primary caregiver to her mom where we live in Wenatchee. So that's why we picked the booming metropolis in Wenatchee. During our friendship, which is over 35 years now, I've lived in Portland and Seattle and Bellingham, Washington, and I've lived just outside of Chicago. I don't think I've lived anywhere else.
Detroit.
Okay. And
were you in Detroit or just outside?
Just outside of Detroit.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Luke has lived, he can tell you, but Prineville in Portland and down just outside of Los Angeles. So it isn't like proximity kept our friendship together, you know? We had to kind of work at it over some different pieces. And it was interesting that some of the dynamics, like I was directing a university ministry in Bellingham, and things were kind of at breakneck speed, and he was a youth pastor in Prineville where it wasn't, you know. And he would call me regularly, and I'm going, I've got 5 minutes, you know. And so it was just kind of almost interruption time, you know. And then he moved to Los Angeles, and I'm going, where is Luke? You know, and then he moved back to CV and could call me when he was driving between churches, you know. And so it just seemed like circumstances. Now that I'm in Wenatchee, I've got all this time, and he's going, I'll get back to you next month. And so, you know, schedules and moving, and he had three kids and I have four kids during that time. Probably one of the most emotional moments for me is that Luke did my wife's funeral. And so we've been bonded in some pretty significant ways. I wanted to just kind of give a quick shot before I turn it back over to him. You know, we talk a lot about agape and talk about it being this ultimate love, and that you kind of like grind through it. And hopefully most of us don't want God to just agape us, you know? We don't want him to just sheer will us. We kind of like him to can't keep from blessing us, you know? That we're his kids and he loves us, you know? Well, in the Gospel of John, it's almost 50-50 between the number of times that the love relationship between the Father and Jesus is called agape and when it's called phileo, you know, when it's a brotherly love. That it's a love that isn't just this commitment, you know, it's a connection. And so it isn't as though, I hope you don't think it's some kind of downshift, you know, it isn't. It is a godly love that the Father and Son have for each other as colleagues, as peers. You know, I understand that the Father is great and Jesus glorifies him, but I also understand that the Father gives Jesus judgment and gives him responsibility, and that at Jesus' most apex moment in Philippians 2, right, where there'll be a name that's above every name, you know, we kind of almost stop where it talks about every knee bowing on heaven and earth and under the earth, but it says that then he gives that back to the Father. That's his ultimate, hey, you know, it's almost like the Moses moment where God says, okay, I'll give you everything you ask. He goes, okay, but show me your glory. You know, it's almost that kind of thing where Jesus goes, okay, we did it. But now, here, I just love you, man. You know, and so I hope that you can see that or hear through what we talk about that building a friendship is really a godly activity, you know. It isn't just because we are finite. Even the infinite beings have it. Okay? Okay.
So that's our theology for today. Okay, legitimately, like, this isn't something that humanity has brought forward. This is something that God has brought forward, and we see it with God. One thing I wanted to make mention of, well, Bill serves at Western. He also pastors a church there in Dryden, just outside of Wenatchee, and little congregation, so is in the mix that way, for sure. And then, he didn't mention this either, but he is actually, for Church Venture Northwest, he's the director of Convergence, which will begin its new cohort, new iteration in the fall of 2024. So that's all coming. As Bill kind of recounted some of how we were in different places at different times, when I first met Bill, he was on staff at Highland Park as the youth pastor. Joe Stoll was the lead pastor there, who went on to be the president at Moody, and he's been in a lot of different places, but that's where Bill was. And just to show you kind of the juxtaposition of our worlds, I was in Prineville, and, you know, it's small town, rural, and being a youth pastor. And if we were going to go anywhere or do anything, it required the raising of funds. Like, even if we wanted to, it didn't matter where we were going. We had to raise funds and do. So I was always trying to figure out a way to kind of, how could we raise some money? And we did all kinds of goofy things that way. But Bill was at Highland Park, it's a big Baptist church in Detroit. And when he would talk about it, he'd say, yeah, my missions budget for the youth department is $50,000. Yeah, I think that was our church budget. I think that's what we had. I'm not sure. I think I was making literally $23,000 a year or something. And it was just like, huh? $50,000? Yeah, we're going to Guatemala or somewhere. And I'm like, what? You know, I'm trying to get to Portland, you know? At any rate, so there's these moments where what I would say to you is it's not, you know, that friendship is an organic thing. And so it starts out, all friendship starts out sort of contrived. But, you know, then something happens and there's a connection and then it becomes more organic. So this morning, we really want to talk about, we gave it to you in the description of this, but resilience, okay? That friendship, spiritual friendship, soul friendship, really does build into that relationship resilience, fortified by support. We want to kind of tear that apart a little bit. It also involves this journey of self-discovery, which I know sounds kind of counterintuitive to friendship, but if it's true spiritual friendship, it really does put a mirror on your life, right? And self-discovery, you start to look into that mirror, the mirror of your friend. He's mirroring back to you, and you start to see things. And those things can be really good. They can be really hard. They can be beautiful, and they can be really ugly. And so it's not all peaches and cream in that regard. I think the last area is just this whole idea of spiritual growth, nurtured through the experience of belonging and belonging to each other in that regard. So there's lots to talk about there, but I want to be able to say, here are the pros, and then we'll give you some, what we could see as some roadblocks that maybe will be helpful going into the future as it relates to that. So Bill, on that topic of resilience and that being fortified by support, you want to speak to that a little bit as it relates to you and I?
No,
thank you. Such a good friend. He's really a good friend.
You know, I told you that Luke did my wife's funeral. My wife struggled through cancer for 7.5 years before she, you know, her life ended. And after about 5 years of that, and we had planted a church a year before she contracted cancer, so it was a rough go. And I eventually had to. We merged with Mars Hill in Seattle because I couldn't keep pastoring the church. And then I coached Acts 29 pastors while my wife was in her last months. About year five, I just couldn't do it anymore. You know, my wife had been great at making home be kind of like an Engedi, you know, the place where you could renew your soul. And all of a sudden, home had become a more intense ministry front than church, you know. And so I didn't like the idea of going to work to get away from home. So I knew I was in a weird place and had to do something different. And I came down to Portland for something, and Luke and I, we were sitting at that McMenamin's on the Vancouver side of the bridge on I-5, and said, man, I am just screwed. And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, okay, so Jeannie's going to die, and I don't want to marry somebody who hasn't been married, because my kids have so shaped my life, I can't imagine marrying somebody who hasn't had that kind of shaping going on in their life. And I said, and I don't want to marry someone who's divorced, because every time I act like her ex, I'm going to get stuff I didn't earn, you know? I said, and I don't want to marry somebody who's a widow, because we're going to look at each other and say, in an ideal world, you wouldn't be my spouse, you know? So I said, there just doesn't seem like any good alternative here. And he looked at me and said, I think you're supposed to feel that way as long as Jeannie's alive. You know? That was just the most powerful thing he could have said to me. That was supportive in the midst of that.
Mm.
It was corrective without saying, "Hey, you dummy," you know.
I would say that support comes at multiple levels too. There's obviously going to be this personal thing that you have going on, but just to kind of follow up on the end of that story, the end of Jeannie's life. Came in the fall, late fall, and Bill and I had been in conversation, and he was free enough to talk about the possibility of what was next. Now, have you ever heard anybody critique that? Like, hey, she's not even cold yet and in the ground. What gives you the right to be talking that way? And that would be pretty true of Bill's journey, because it's like cancer is this awful thing that you watch in these stages, you know, and you're watching the death of something daily. Something else is dying, and okay, and I'm trying to live into that with him as best I can, but he's there every day. It's pretty rugged. But I can remember we get to the end and it's Jeannie's funeral, and Bill might have another take on this, but that following early spring, I was leading a group of pastors over to Israel, and we were looking at the life of Christ when we were over there and trying to get to some of those spots, and I asked Bill if he would come on that trip, that he would teach. Now, others had heard Bill kind of processing, and once Jeannie's funeral was done, Bill was starting to say, so is there going to be life with another woman? And so he's, you know, it's the age at that point where there's a whole bunch of stuff online, and you can, you know, kind of, so Bill's looking online and kind of, and man, everybody got all ruffled. And I was just like, what? And I found myself in a situation of, in those moments when he wasn't around, of having to support him. And everybody was wanting to take a shot like, that is so cold, man. Jeannie, you know, she died in November and, you know, it's January and Bill's talking about another wife. Da, 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 da. But I'd walked with him, right? And Jeannie, in a very real sense, had died a long time ago. And if any of you knew Jeannie, don't know that anybody did, but she was incredible glue for a family and a ministry. Very understated. And she's not going to be the person you're going to see dominating the room, not with her voice or anything that she might say or do, but man, just super glue for relationship and for Bill tempering. You know what I mean? She could bring that in that. And so it would be natural because you're wanting to honor her, but I would defend and say, hey, you don't know. You can't really say that. And so support comes in different ways that way. Now, Bill, you might make some comment about that, but I would say on the flip side, coming my way, as long as we're talking about support, Bill would hear from me pretty regularly my struggles in my own married life. Donna's here with me, and she would hear this. If she were sitting here, she'd listen to it all and nod and affirm that I was a husband in the making, you know, for a long time. And Bill would listen to that ad nauseum, right? And I want to speak to this at a larger level in a minute, but it was absolutely uncanny how Bill could unpack my questioning or my trying to say, hey, I'm trying to make sense of this marriage, and how it never landed on the marriage, never landed on me, and it never landed on Donna. None of his counsel landed there. He could say things about us and marriage and all that stuff, but it landed somewhere completely different. And that landing was always a landing on God. Now, the first time it happens, I'm a little frustrated. Like, yeah, it's not what I'm talking about. You know, what are you, super spiritual here? You're just going to try and bring it all back to God? What are you doing? And as I sat in it a couple times, this wasn't disingenuous. Bill had the ability to see things that I couldn't see. Anybody had that situation? Blind spot? What's the most frustrating thing about a blind spot? You don't know it's there. And somebody comes up and goes, you have a blind spot. And you go, I do not. I do not. What are you talking about? It's because it's irrational in your own mind. You're like, I cannot see it. How can it be there? I'm not that way. And Bill was adept at being able to say, Luke, it's there. It really is there. This, yeah, Joe.
Question. Yeah. For both of you, so like Luke, you're comments to Bill, and Bill, you're kind of helping him work through marriage stuff. I don't want to feel like I'm pastoring my friends, but I do think as Christians, we're called to a different kind of friendship in the world, and there's a lot of counsel, like godly counsel in there. So can you help us understand maybe where your minds were, where your hearts were? Are you going into pastoral mode? Are you staying in friend mode? Is that even in
I think that's great, Joe. It's a great question and a great comment. You want to take a swing, Bill?
I think it's, you know, for me, I think I cut my teeth on ministry as a youth pastor rather than as a lead pastor, okay? When I started being a youth pastor, I was 18 years old. And, you know, I had girls in my youth group that were 18. And so it was like I had to learn real quick how to be a peer that wasn't available. You know what I mean? And I had to learn how to be a peer that could step into looking for some kind of wisdom, but not where I knew the minute I wore a hat, like, pastor, I would lose some of these kids because they didn't see me as old enough to be that. You know what I mean? I think for me, I've had to learn how to put on a pastor's hat rather than put on the friend hat. So I don't think that was a wrestle for me with Luke. I think I'm caught off guard every once in a while when someone in my church doesn't see me as a peer. Because that's where I start with them. You know what I mean? I don't start with them with a hierarchy or I'm bringing the wisdom, you know? And so I get every once in a while, they go, well, pastor, you know, like, we went on vacation with this couple in the church, and the wife called me pastor on vacation. I'm going, what? You know, did he come with us? You know, so I don't think I was pastoring him, Joe, but I do think that's a fair question because I've pastored my kids before.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've had my wife say, do not pastor me. Right. That's happened plenty. You know, like, wait a second. And I do think, Joe, Well, I don't know that there's any kind of specific dividing line. I do think it's a question of genuineness, really and truly. If you or if I were to try and give Bill cliche, that's going to fall flat. And I would say to you that this may not be the perfect illustration, but I think as pastors and as preachers, we're pretty good with transparency. You can stand in the pulpit and you can say, yeah, you know, this thing, the Lord really convicted me of this, and I want to share it with you, and this is what he showed me, and I'm on the other side of it now. And isn't that a glorious thing? And I'm not saying it's a bad illustration. We all have stories of transformation. But that's not vulnerability. And vulnerability is you don't have an answer. You're still in the middle of it. And I think a true friend has to be able to recognize that and say, and you know, Jonathan spoke to it. It's like what struck me the most was his emphasis on sitting in your sin long enough to see the vividness of it, or sitting in your pain long enough to see the vividness of it, in order when you go to give that to Jesus, that it actually means something. And I do think a friend, and Bill has done this, has sat in the middle of my sin or pain. I've certainly, yeah, that's occurred. And it isn't a cliche. It's not just, I'm giving you the pastoral answer. And that obviously takes some time, and it takes a fair amount of trust to be vulnerable. And the best way for that to happen is for somebody to be the first one to blink. And Bill was the first one to blink. He was the first one to be vulnerable. And I'm like, can you do that? Like, you're not making any caveats here. You're just telling me how you sinned. And that was ugly, you know? And like, what should I pronounce? Judgment? What should I do? I don't know. It was scary, but I think Bill was the first one to do that. And then that was totally off-putting for me, meaning not off-putting. I was discombobulated. I don't know. It was just like, oh, what? You're giving me that. And then I had to really slow down, stop and go, yeah, the cliche here is going to, that's going to be really stupid. I need to just sit with them. Okay.
And it isn't just places you're comfortable with, like I was single and had to go to a pastor's conference in Florida. And I wasn't being tempted to try and find a strip club, but I was wondering, I was hovering around a liquor store and called Luke, you know, and just said, hey, I need to talk to somebody, you know. And, you know, at the same time, he said, can you make an agreement with me that you won't drink alone, okay? Well, I had a Rottweiler, and I taught her how to step on a pony keg, you know.
Dogs can be really good friends. They really can. No.
They won't pass.
That's right. They don't.
But that was, I mean, even for him to not kind of almost draw a line in the sand and say, dude, if you're going to, you know, just be wallowing in the self-pity, if you're going to try and numb things with a drink, man, call me when you're ready to get serious. He didn't do that, you know. He did go in a place where I was not able to find a way to cope, you know?
So learning the way to support is really critical in a spiritual friendship, and saying to yourself in those moments when vulnerability is starting to occur, how do I really support? What would be the best way to support? I had listened to Bill enough prior to us being friends, as he was training and presenting and all over the nation. I had listened to him enough to know that he had a dynamic relationship with God. Bill knows a lot of stuff. In fact, is Sean in here? Let me see, Sean. Sean Newberry came up to me last night and he said, I would like to be introduced to Bill. I think he's forgotten more than I know in terms of knowledge of God and things. And he said, and he's helped me from afar and I just want to meet him. So I need to introduce you to Sean. But at any rate, Bill's relationship with God was real. And that has a rawness to it too. But for me, I am not like Bill in any way, shape, or form. Not in my personality, not the way we go about things. It's just very, very different. And I would be more on that linear kind of motion. And Bill is going to be much more circular, okay, if I just use those two words. And so I'm trying to get categories and trying to get things figured out. And Bill's like, I don't care about lines, categories and stuff. And so it's different. And I think in the world of support, what was most important for me was that he had this relationship with God, and it was real. And it was unnerving at times. And that openness, both with the difficult things in his life or sin, but also on the other side, what God was saying. I have a journal here. I learned to journal from Bill. And if you just take a look at this, it's got a bunch of different colors, right? Some of you know this because I've shared this before and Bill has shared it. But when I first met Bill, I looked at his thing. I said, what's the world is a journal with all these colors? And he said, oh, well, the colors all represent something. Black is my thoughts. Blue is the word of God. If I pulled something out of there. Red is my confession and my prayer requests. Green is thankfulness. And purple is if I've heard from God. And Bill had lots of purple. And I started into this and I would write and write and write and thought this is such a cool way to do this. And I've done it for years. And still, when you look at my, mine doesn't have a lot of purple. And I had to learn to accept that God speaks to me differently than how he would speak to Bill. But that's part of how you're learning how to support and how that support can help you, or how that person can help you with that. There is a definite advantage to learning those things in the way of spiritual friendship. All right, so that support allows for a resilience over many years. You're in it with each other that way. This whole idea of self-discovery, Bill, we've touched on it a little bit, but encouragement. You want to speak to that? I have some thought too, but yeah.
So I just want you to hear, I mean, one of the reasons we referenced the Annum Corum is because that's a Celtic word that means spiritual friend, okay? And it's the word that Celtic spirituality used for spiritual director. They didn't look at it as somebody who was on top speaking to somebody below them. They looked at it as alongside going on the same journey. So when we're talking about encouragement, if we look at the way God encourages us, or God encourages people in the Word, okay, he doesn't do it by saying, yes, you can. You know, most of the time when somebody says, God, I can't do it, he goes, yeah, I know. That's why I'm going to go with you, you know. And when God commissions somebody to do something, he promises his personal presence You know, whether it's the Great Commission, I'm going to be with you always. Whether it happens to be Jeremiah, don't say I'm too young, I will be with you. Whether it happens to be Moses, when I send someone else to talk to Pharaoh, I'm going with you. You know, that promised personal presence is the support that was supposed to be the juice that lets somebody go. And I think that's the piece that is most supportive to me, is that I don't have to think that. I wonder if Luke will respond negatively to this. I know that he'll respond by being present, you know, and that makes me want to seek out that presence. And you know, you can be at the place where, if I were sitting in your place, I would be saying, I wish I had a friend like Luke. Okay, what I hope you hear is, I want to be a friend like Luke. You know, because that's what this workshop is more about, is what does it look like for you to be that friend that invites that kind of friendship response, you know?
I think if you don't take anything else out of the seminar, that's it, okay? I really think that's it. And that's the piece that I would say to you, when Bill was vulnerable in those early days, that was him being a friend. It was very different for me to have to hold that as he brought it. I had to figure out a way to hold that. And yeah, him being a friend at that level was empowering, encouraging to me. I was thinking of this story out of 1 Samuel. Lots of people want to point to David and Jonathan for friendship, spiritual friendship and all that. I won't bore you with the whole of this, but David's on the run. He's been in the cave. He's cobbled together this core of people that are loyal to him, and he's on the run. And it looks as if the Philistines have just kind of screamed into Keilah and are taking over the city. And David inquires of the Lord, "Should I go down? Will you give the Philistines into my hand?" Okay, and God says, "Yes, go." But here's what I want to do. I want to jump down, and obviously Jonathan is not with David, but he gets to David and has some words for him. This is all the way down in 15. I think it's 15, isn't it? Please be. David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life. Now, the only thing I would say there is, that's never happened to me. No one's come after me. No one's put a hit out on me. And I can't imagine what that must feel like for David, just simply to be so close to the king, so committed to the king, and now have that be in total reversal. That would be very unsettling. So David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life. David was in the wilderness at Ziph at Horesh, and Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh. And that would be very risky for Jonathan. And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose, went to David at Horesh, and strengthened his hand in God. And here's what's crazy to me, is that they are incredibly close friends. And we'll read, you know, about that later. Just we've read about it, we'll read about it again. As we keep reading here, so he went down there to strengthen David's hand in God. And he said to him, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul, my father, also knows this." And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. So it strengthened in God and made a covenant before the Lord. And I would say I've been on the receiving end of that kind of friendship from Bill that I told you early on would point me to God. It's not that Bill came in and said, "You need to know God, Luke. You don't know, and you need to know the things of God." That's not how that worked. But we always landed in the same spot. Bill helping, unveiling, helping to clear away some things so that I could see God and be strengthened in God. And spiritual friendships got to be there. It's okay to be friends at another level, But there's no deeper friendship than that. And so that level of encouragement is truly one of self-discovery. And it's not telling me what I should think, okay? It's not telling me, I know, we need to speak truth to each other at varying times. We need to call out sin. I understand that. But in this deeper relationship, it's one of sitting long enough and holding the mirror long enough for someone to see for themselves. And it becomes self-discovery. What's the power of self-discovery versus someone telling you? You own it. You believe it. And that takes a true friend to sit long enough and walk with you long enough to allow you to see it, to be deft in their whole demeanor and presentation, to be a friend like that. It's not a rush to the right answer. That's all I'm trying to say. It's allowing for that to come to fruition in self-discovery. All right. What are some roadblocks, maybe, Bill, to that whole thing?
I have a question.
Oh, sure.
What did you see in him that made you feel safe enough to reach out to him and
I ask myself that all the time. What did I see?
He called me baby once.
I do think that that's a big deal, is fear of being wounded, you know? And I have another friend who, he said that the only time we change is when the fear of not changing is greater than the fear of changing, you know? And I think I fear loneliness more than betrayal or rejection. And so when I felt alone, I got driven to connect.
I don't know, trying to answer that question of like, how do you know if it's safe? I don't think you can actually definitively know. You know, it will be a risk, right? And we certainly can tell some stories about taking the risk and that backfiring. I would just say to you that I think the risk is worth it. I'm not saying go cast your seed wide, you know, but I think it is worthy of the risk. And there will have to be some markers that you would see. I don't know what they are necessarily, but that you would know kind of intuitively, like, I think that person's okay. I think I could do that. And of course, that builds as you become friends. I do think it's imperative to confine what you know to the friendship. This isn't for consumption at a wide level, you know, that's the detriment to the safe place, right? That I told somebody else something deep and dark about someone else. Yeah, I don't think that that's going to be helpful. But that, again, is in your control, right? So you can determine that. You can say, okay, I'm going to hold this in confidence. I'm not going to share it, okay? And you may be confused with someone giving you a confession and thinking, man, should I tell somebody else? Yeah, holding it in confidence is critical. But I think that is truly being a friend. Yeah. Roadblock? Is there?
I think one of the roadblocks to going deeper, you know, like Luke said, we are very different. And so there's a point when you're kind of in a relationship where when the person doesn't react the way you either anticipated or want them to, you have a tendency to go shop somewhere else rather than say, okay, I've got to learn what that meant, you know, so I have to learn Luke. I'll use the analogy because I am remarried, and I felt like I was a biblical husband, you know. But if we could just look at what the Bible says about being a husband, that's like the alphabet, okay? And then you, each one of us uses the same exact alphabet, and we have a legally defining signature. Our signature is different, you know, and if somebody tries to mimic it, it's called forgery, okay? And I was doing a forgery with my second wife, trying to use my first wife's signature. You know, it's the same building blocks, it's the same alphabet, but I have to learn how to sign Sue rather than to sign Jeannie as being a husband to her, you know? And in a sense, I was looking for Luke to sign with my signature because that's what a friend would do rather than learn his signature of friendship, you know, and receiving it that way.
Anybody not understand that?
Everybody.
Yeah. Here is one of the things that just on display in the way Bill is going to even set up an illustration or analogy. Okay. I wouldn't have that one for the record. That wouldn't be me to come up with that. But it is very true. And I think the risk in me now being vulnerable with Bill was the understanding initially that he wasn't going to give me the 1, 2, 3 of what to do. And I'll tell you what, that speaks to me, 1, 2, 3. It's my personality. And I had to learn Bill. I had to learn how to speak it. And yet it's incredibly valuable because it's not 1, 2, 3. That's the whole point. And if we're going to say God created all of us in his image and gave gifts, it's you're unwrapping the gift. That's what you're doing. And it doesn't look like what you wanted, but it doesn't make it any less a gift, you know? So you got to get that thing unwrapped and be able to see what gift is coming at you in that situation. Yep. Yep, Joe, go.
There's like a stat, sort of like when women are getting birth and you ask them, like married couples, who's your best friend? Like 60% of women say my husband's my best friend. And then like 40% of husbands say my wife is my best friend. But then later, like post-retirement age, after careers, you ask women, who's your best friend? Now 40% of women say it's my husband, 60% say it's somebody else. And for guys, it flips. So that for men, it becomes 40% of men have a best friend who's not their wife. 60% of men say, yeah, my wife's my best friend. So it seems like careers for men tend to be a friendship destroying thing. And then rearing children for women can be like a friendship destroying thing. But just isolating, I guess. So with your wife being a friend, I'm curious, what is there a balance there between how much we depend on our wives for friendship versus somebody else? Is there an element of this in which we can put something on their backs that they're not supposed to carry? Or is it okay for your wife to be your best friend?
I think my first wife was wired to kind of be a best friend, but I was also 21 when I got married. So we grew up together, you know. When I married the second time, I was 50. And that cake had already been baked. And so there are some values that just don't kind of, you know, necessarily mesh. We both raised families, you know? And so we've been married for 15 years now, and I can see in her things that have changed towards me and things in me that have changed towards her in our time together. But she's my first wife for a career was a high school math teacher, okay? My second wife, she is an ICU nurse, which means she kind of responds immediately, right? And so it's kind of ready, fire, aim. And with my first wife, there was time to aim. And so there are a lot of times where I can't give my first, if I'm reacting, I can't let that reaction go to my current wife, because she'll feed off the reaction, you know, rather than kind of, my first wife could bring a non-anxious presence to that. My second wife can't, you know? And so I don't think there's a rule, maybe that's what he's saying, there's not a 1, 2, 3. I don't think there's a rule to which, how, where your wife can be. That's what I'm saying. I had to learn that because I started treating my second wife the way I treated my first wife, and the chemistry was just so different, you know? And so I had to learn her in order to learn how to relate best to her as her partner, you know? So we moved to Wenatchee, and she has 3 sisters and a mom there. So she has a lot of support rather than just me, you know?
I think the tension of that, Joe, of like, yeah, so do I have someone outside my marriage that I'm closer to? Is that possible? Yes, it's possible. Is it profitable? It's another question. If I were to try to say, let me describe it, of all the people on planet Earth that I've ever interacted with, the one who's influenced me the most and formed me the most is Donna. Would I say that that formation was a result of friendship? Not entirely. I was married at 20 to her, so that's, we're in our 46th year. We did grow up together. There's great benefit in doing that, growing up together, but there's also a lot of stuff that isn't nearly as beneficial. How would she view Bill today? She knows that he's my best friend. She knows that. She would say that. Would I say that she is my best friend? I probably wouldn't say that, but it would be an entirely different position that she's in. Entirely different. And I will go to my grave honoring her presence in my life as the most impacting. There's no question about it. No question about it. Hands down. So, In terms of what, is there something we shouldn't bring to our wives? Yeah, I would say yes. Yeah, if you're gonna ask me, say, what are those things? I'm not gonna say that, okay. but I do think, yeah, there are times when a friend is needed, and that's just very, very different. Now, that true friend is gonna point you, hopefully, back to God, you know, which in my case, helped my marriage immensely, right? Wasn't he telling me what I was supposed to do with Donna, but what I was supposed to do with God, which would change my heart. You can behave your way, and that's what Bill was saying, out of anything or try to, that's not going to change you. Just mere behavior, yeah.
Yeah, just a quick question. I'm not sure where it fits in the outline. Are you guys, lack of a better term, buddies? I mean, do you hang out together? It sounds like it's pretty pastoral, therapeutic. I mean, in another sense, are you friends? I mean, how does that go?
I think when
I don't like him.
Whenever I'm coming through town, I stop, you know, visit him. This is going to sound very materialistic, but. I had a motorcycle, and I just bought a second motorcycle. My wife's going, how many motorcycles do you need? I go, let's talk about shoes. Okay, so I bought a second motorcycle, but before I bought it, I called Luke and said, if I buy a second motorcycle, are you going to ride it? You know, and he couldn't commit to it. But I did buy it with the idea that he's probably not going to buy a motorcycle, but I'd like to go riding with him, you know?
Are we buddies? We have certainly spent hours howling hilariously for hours, right? We have, Donna and I went up to Bill and Sue's in early part of the winter, January sometime, and spent a couple, 3 days up there, went to Leavenworth this year, Leavenworth and all that. That doesn't happen a lot. But it has.
We went to Mexico together.
We went to Mexico. If Bill is coming into town, he's going to stay at my house. Okay. If I'm anywhere close to him, that's what's going to happen. I love, you know, Jonathan saying you got to have something on the outside and a hobby and all that stuff. And it's great. I think that's true. We don't fly fish together. That'd look pretty ugly, actually. He would very much like me to ride a motorcycle, and I keep thinking, I just don't have the reaction time anymore. You know? He's done it all his life, you know? And I would be learning. Yeah, that would. Plus, my wife is a nurse as well, and she says no motorcycles. So, anyway. But it wouldn't prevent us from doing something, Tom. I think it's a great question. It's not like we're getting out our calendars for the year and going, hey, let's go here, let's go there. But if you called and said, hey, you want to go to Mexico or you want to do this, yeah, we'd probably do it. Jordan?
You guys became friends in the 20s. And then you both got married pretty young, so I don't know exactly when your relationship started. But then moving through the life stages of 30s and small kids and everything else, I'm in a stage in my life where I'm watching a bunch of former friends talk about how hard it is to keep or make friends when you're 30s. Because either you have a relational network, then life can be really hard, and a couple of them survive, or you're maybe flying on your own until your small kids have grown up and then bring market back into your life. Have any like just cool suggestions for how to, if you don't already have it, just like hang on and pray desperately for a friend, or like how do you form a relationship when margins are so thin?
You can go online. There's a sign. It says, let's be friends. Okay, Jordan, you know.
Farmer wants a friend. Yeah.
Sorry. Just that the crush of life in those really intense times, early 30s with lots of kids, you don't have a lot of time to relate to anybody else and to develop a friendship. It's not happening. What do you do? Is that fair, Jordan?
Yeah.
So I think that for the long view, you've got to understand that we live in a disposable society. And so when you move to another church, some of the intentionality of stopping some of those relationships, hoping they'll go over to the next pastor, you learn, you know what I mean? Other parts, you maybe cut them off because they're going to be painful or hard to continue. But we need to somehow understand, I'm not going to be able to drag every friendship through my whole life, okay? But there are some people that if I'm going to keep that friend, I am going to have to figure out what it looks like to drag that person into the next context, you know? And I think that's the part where we started. We've moved all around the country, you know? We've been on the same church staff at one point. You know, when I was the director of Sun Life, the national director, and so I appointed Luke to be on my board, so he'd have to fly out to Chicago and see me four times a year, you know? Then when he was at CB and I was a pastor of a church in Seattle, he put me on the church planting board for CB, and I came down, and then I was coming down once a month to do some stuff with Convergence, and so we just kind of put ourselves in each other's traffic pattern, even when we got out of each other's proximity, you know?
And we can go back to Jonathan and David. They're not hanging out. They're not doing buddy time. Okay. Friendship is incredibly deep, and it's pretty rugged at that moment that I gave you. Jonathan would not see David again. He'd die, you know, on Gilboa. That would happen. And yet their friendship was as deep as anybody's in that regard. And my wife's father, not a believer, was an orphan, so was her mom. She came out of a family, it was pretty rough, and I remember talking to her dad, Cal, and he had served in World War II, and he was just hardcore street kid that grew up and still just had those street instincts. But I can remember him sitting me down at a very young age and saying, he wasn't necessarily a believer of God, but he said, Luke, you can count yourself lucky if you have one friend in your lifetime. And you know how those things, for whatever reason, just gets drilled into your memory bank, you know? And I do think that that's fair, you know, that is this going to be widespread? I know guys who can make friends with anybody. You know, I have a younger brother who just is, he can make friends with the guy at the convenience store. You know, we just walk in to get some gum or something. He just is that way. That's not who I am. It's not who I am. And there are people that can hold on to lots of friendships. We traveled, and I don't know that this is the normal thing, traveled in terms of churches and ministries. Some of you will be at the same place for the entirety of your life, which has got a different dynamic too. But in moving, that whole idea of who stays and who goes, you know, in those friendships, at every church stop that I've had, there has been a retention of somebody, at least one. When you get enough of those moves, I would have my wife say, I'm not getting involved. I'm not going to go do this. I can't even be a good friend to the friends I have now. And you're going to ask me to make more, you know, kind of a thing. And it's, you know, so there is that tension. But I think narrowing it down to Jordan, I would say, yeah, be a friend. Okay. Now, what's going to be the way that that happens? I would say that one of the things that attracted me to Bill was that he had a strong, defined understanding of purpose. So when I first met Bill, what I understood was that he had a commitment to make disciples. And what was fascinating to me is I use that phrase, make disciples, and instantly it connotes something for you. And the thing about it with Bill was that was across the board in any situation and with every level of person. It just wasn't limited to youth ministry or, you know, a target of some kind. It was his life. It was just the way he lived his life. And I was so wanting that commitment in my own life, you know, that it was a connection. And I do think when you're looking for a friend, there's got to be something along that line that you connect at. Okay. Like I said, we're opposite on a lot of things, but on that thing, we're not. You know, we've been linked.
Well, I know we're out of time and I appreciate it. I wanted to say just a couple things. One is, Brent, you should have been up here too, because, he has been at his same church for a couple, almost three decades.
And, over three decades.
And he has friends in his church that are his friends, and they've come in on and off of his board, and he just, they're his buddies, you know? And so it's possible to do. You don't have to find another pastor in another church just to make sure you've got a soul friend, you know? There were three or four things that we kind of objectively said today that probably in the middle of how we said it, you didn't hear, but that a friend is encouraging, a friend respects you, a friend forgives, a friend is supportive, and a friend celebrates you. You know, those are things that... We're on our outline, whether we articulated them that way or not.
Yeah. So hard to say, oh, we'll cram this into an hour. We'll get there. So you can understand the forgiveness piece, I think. Okay. What does it mean when you say, Bill, a friend respects?
So from my perspective, I felt like there was always he believes in me, and when I'm not doing the right thing, rather than judging me, he wants to see me be my best again, you know?
And I would just say, it can get lost here. When someone is respectable, it's very easy to respect them. But when they're not, that's actually where the friendship fills in the gap, right? I'm going to respect you. I'm going to respect you even in the moment when it looks like you are just pulling the trigger here, you know, I'm gonna respect you. So those are the building blocks that way. And it does take vulnerability, and legitimately, I would hope that you could walk out of here saying, I want to be a friend. That's really what I would hope for.
You said something you just really briefly about celebrating.
Yeah, here's the problem in our world in general. We envy others, okay? And envy is thinking, I should own a motorcycle. Actually, I don't feel that way. But at any rate, it's I should have what they have. Even if it's, I should have a friend like that. Okay, it's envy that is that sin. And you'll know that you're not in the envy zone when you can fully celebrate somebody else's good fortune, grace that God has bestowed on them. When you can enter into it and not be judgmental. Like, you spent another $15,000 on another motorcycle? I don't know if it was 15, but I'm just picking that out of the air. Like, really? You can't ride two at once. What are you doing? You know, no, but to enter in. Enter in and to celebrate it. How good does that feel on the receiving end when somebody celebrates your good fortune? Versus, oh, wow, that's really cool. Wish I had one of those. You know, that. And Bill's done it with me for sure and celebrated wins and those things. And I get to do that for him. Yeah, really does build friendship. And, you know, we're fulfilling what Scripture says, right? To weep with those who weep, but rejoice with those who rejoice. Yeah.
Did that answer that, Matt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anybody else? Thought, question?
Just a quick question. You guys talk about different paces of life and seem to alternate significantly. How do you reconcile that or even just work through that, especially if there's a deep curve on one side or the other? And you need either them to slow down or speed up, or if that's even.
I don't know if we've ever kind of addressed it in that way. I do think that we feel comfortable contacting each other, you know, and so like I said, you know, there would be times where it was almost rapid fire. I knew there would be a couple times a week anyway I was going to get a call and then change a job and it could go a couple months, you know. And I think the thing that never went through my mind is our friendship evaporating, you know. So I think if somehow those touches and that kind of, if the frequency and the pace starts to be one of your measurements of the quality of the friendship, then I think you could be in trouble. Yeah.
And probably more than anything, it's that if you've set up some kind of metric, you know, to say this is what a good friend is going to look like, if you set up the metric that way, that's difficult. If you're just going to trust God through Bill, that's what I would have to do to be a friend, then it doesn't have a metric like that. It's not performance based. When Bill lost Jeannie and me asking him if he'd come to Israel, what he basically was trying to say to me is, I'm not qualified to go. I'm not in the right space. I'm not, you know, this is, and he was just in a dark spot. I did feel really strongly about him going. Now, it was a huge benefit to the pastors that I'd brought. Or, you know, that were in it was a huge benefit. But Bill couldn't see that at the moment, and he felt like he couldn't do it. I knew he could, and that I knew that he needed to. You know, they just needed to come. So there are those moments when you're stepping up and saying, no, you need to be here. You know, there is that, but it's supportive. Hey, can I just pray for all of you? Let me do that. Lord, your word says that Jesus is our friend. And friendship is critical for the Godhead. It's critical. Relationship. May we never drift away from the anchor that you've given us in your very personhood and in the word that you gave us. And instead, rejoice that this is something that you long for us here on earth as well. I pray for everyone in this room that they would seek to be a good friend to someone or to a few. And then, God, would you in return reward them with someone that would reciprocate, that they could truly bond at a level that is free and easy and secure, no metrics, vulnerable, supportive, encouraging. God, may you find us to be people who would long to know someone at that level and for them to know us. It's not lost on us that you know everything about us and you love us deeply. And we would like to image you on this earth in that endeavor as well. So I pray that for everybody in the room, may they find each other and be friends. For Jesus' sake, I pray, and for his glory alone. Amen.
Amen.